Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with some articles from AARP The Bulletin, which was their feature article, Outsmart the System. And I've been doing it in bits and pieces, but I'm going to do a little bit longer segment today. Let's start out with check inventory before you go. Many major retailers' websites can tell you if an item is available at a particular store, and sometimes even hold it for you. Don't drive to the store only to find out that the item you really wanted isn't in stock, says Jason Goldberg, Chief Commerce Strategy Officer at Publicis Group and e-commerce expert at RetailGeek.com. Look into personal shopping programmers. Some types of retailers, like luxury brand department stores, furniture stores, or even Best Buy, will allow you to make an appointment in advance with a personal shopper, Goldberg says. This can be a great way to make sure you'll get personal attention for that important purchase. And time your trip. Goldberg suggests shopping during daytime hours on weekdays. You can look up a store on Google Maps, and it will give you the store hours and tell you what the store's busy times are. A little kindness goes a long way. Whether you're dining or shopping, remember that many of the employees are working with fewer resources. A large part of their day is dealing with customers who didn't get the experience they want and are upset, Goldberg says. Being patient and having a bit of empathy for the employee is a great way to get their best service. Shop online. The next suggestion. With the decline of brick-and-mortar retail, how can I get the best shopping experience? Many retail chains that you have frequented for years are reducing their brick-and-mortar stores. For example, about 600 Family Dollar stores closed earlier this year, and Macy's will close an estimated 55 by the end of the year. So if you haven't already, now is a good time to embrace online shopping. Outsmart the system. Look for real reviews. How do you know if a product review on shopping sites are legit? A listing with only positive reviews could actually be a red flag, Goldberg says. It's important that there are some negative reviews so that you know the review system is honest. Don't get stuck on one site. With physical stores, it might be more convenient to visit the same one or two repeatedly. But with online shopping, you should search for your item on sites such as Yahoo Shopping or Google Shopping, and those sites will show you how much it costs at various retailers. People need to be willing to take some time up front, says Trey Bodge, shopping expert at TrueTray.com. And check the return policy. With a physical store, returns tend to be straightforward. Just bring the item back. But online shopping involves mailing the item back, and that can be a hassle. That can especially be true when products are shipped from abroad. Return policies may be strict, or you may have to pay a fee to send them back. Pay attention to the policy of what they will accept and how long you have to initiate a return. Phone SOS. Why is my phone so complicated? How can I make it work for me? New phones debut every year, and the added features can be confusing. The smartphone went from an elegant object, which mixed a music player and a telephone, into something that is constantly trying to grab and keep your attention, says Carl Newport, professor of computer science at Georgetown University and author of Digital Minimalism. This has all made the phone into something that is very cluttered and distracting. Outsmart the system. Start from scratch. Newport suggests stripping down the apps on your phone to just the phone and text functions, a music player, and a map app, and then rebuilding what you really need from there. A big reason for the clutter is that we often add apps on a whim and then rarely use them. have a high barrier for entry for any other app or service before you put it back on your phone, he says. Declutter your home screen. As you add apps back in, take note of how you organize them. Liz Hamburg, founder and CEO of Can Do Tech, encourages users to keep apps they use the most on the first page of their phone's home screen. The simpler, the better. Move everything else to a secondary screen. Adjust accessibility settings. Changing the font size or screen contrast can make it easier to navigate your smartphone. Try switching from light background to dark background to see if one is easier to read. Hamburg also suggests enabling Siri or another voice assistant that can type on your behalf if you have difficulty with your smartphone screen. AARP Resources, the Personal Technology Resource Center, aarp.org/tech, offers news on the latest tech, plus how-to articles and videos. Senior Planet from AARP offers free virtual tech classes as well as useful articles at seniorplanet.org. You can also speak to a trainer for help with a tech problem at 888-713-3495 on weekdays from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And let's look at one more for today, job search. Why won't anyone look at my resume? How can I get noticed? If you feel like you're being ignored, you may be right. A typical corporate job opening can attract more than 250 applications, according to job site Glassdoor. With so many people applying for each position, most larger companies use technology that scans resumes first and filters out which applications get seen by an actual reviewer. And even if you make that cut, a person will typically spend just 7.4 seconds giving it a first read, one study shows. Outsmart the system. Learn the right keywords. The first hurdle is all about overcoming the machines, says Edward McGoldrick, founder of Resume Professors and the Temp Experts Staffing Agency. He's referring to the computer programs that perform a first pass. The more relevant the resume is written toward the job description, the better chance your resume has. Read each job description carefully and make sure your resume and cover letter contain some of that exact language, such as designed, planned, collaborated, improved, or innovated. Don't use synonyms. Use the keywords they give you in the job listing, says Robin Coburn, a Los Angeles-based resume writing expert. It may only need a few words to bring it to the top of the list. If you're uncertain which words from the job postings are most important, paste the text into an AI tool such as ChatGPT, Microsoft Copilot, or Gemini, and ask it to identify the keywords. Follow all the instructions. This may seem obvious, but it often gets overlooked when submitting multiple applications. Make sure you follow the instructions for each application to the letter, Coburn says. Did they ask for a cover letter? Did they specify a number of references? Use the correct file formats for any documents you are asked to upload, and if there is an outline application, fill in each question, even if it repeats information on your resume. The machine will bounce you out if you make little mistakes. Network. One way to beat hiring technology is to make a connection with someone who works for the company. Engaging actively with recruiters and other professionals in your industry on LinkedIn can help you establish a positive reputation and demonstrate thought leadership, says Keith Spencer, a career expert at FlexJobs. If the name of the hiring manager has not been given, you may be able to sleuth it out via LinkedIn or the corporate webpage, Coburn adds. Failing that, you may be able to find the person who would be your supervisor and reach out. but make sure you have a real question about the company or a positive or hiring process so your email has substance. AARP resources. Check out aarp.org/work to see tips and resources for job seekers looking for work or just exploring their options, including information about finding part-time, flexible, and work-from-home jobs. Access the free downloadable resource, Strategies for a Successful Job Search, at aarp.org/job-search-toolkit. The AARP Job Board, aarp.org/jobs, matches job seekers with employers that value experience. It provides easy-to-use filters so job seekers can apply for available positions across the country. If you've been out of work for some time, AARP Foundation can provide expert guidance for your job search. The Back to Work 50 Plus program offers training, coaching, and other skills to navigate the job hunting waters in your community or online. Go to aarpfoundation.org/back-to-work50+. AARP Skills Builder for Work, aarp.org/work skills, helps you gain in-demand skills that could give you an edge in today's competitive job market. This next article is also from the Bulletin. It's a Q&A with Seth and Lauren Rogan. It was scary and unnerving, and I felt so alone. Actors, filmmakers Seth Rogan, 42, and Lauren Miller Rogan, 43, have produced a short film documenting Lauren's late mother's struggle with early-onset Alzheimer's disease. How did this documentary come about? Lauren, my mom's condition really advanced in 2008 when suddenly I had a smartphone camera with me. She was slamming doors and screaming at nothing. It was this mind-blowing moment of, this person is so far from whom my mom was. It was scary and unnerving, and I felt so alone. And I just was like, I've got to film this. If people knew that this was the reality, it wouldn't be whispered about. Everyone would be taking action. Seth, do you think that because you work in comedy, when you talk about such a serious matter, people will take more notice? Seth, yeah. I think people probably are confused at first that I'm speaking about this in any way, shape, or form. But I also think the type of comedy I've done and the type of movies I've made have been based on my real life and the things I'm experiencing. We made a movie, 50-50, about my 25-year-old horny friend having cancer that he survived. Lauren, your mom didn't want others to know about her disease while she was alive. Why not? Lauren, I'd say it's society's fault that my mom wanted to keep it a secret. She had seen both of her parents go through it, and she was diagnosed only 4 years after my grandmother passed away. I can only imagine how terrifying that was for her. She wanted to maintain her independence as much as she could until she couldn't. I understand why she wanted to keep it a secret, but that doesn't mean it wasn't really hard for me to keep it a secret. Seth, what was it like dating someone who was dealing with such a huge emotional issue? Seth, honestly, I had never been in a serious relationship of any type before, so I had nothing to compare it against. I felt very bad for her. I could support her and love her, but I couldn't actually untangle how to address any of these problems. I implored Lauren to go to therapy. Some people come from families where they don't like to delve deep. My family can't wait to indulge in the emotional darkness. Lauren, I wasn't like, no, I won't go to therapy. I was like, I feel terrible. I'll do anything to feel better. What have you learned about being a caregiver from seeing Lauren's dad do it? Seth, because of how hard it is, we were like, this will kill him. He will drop dead trying to lift Lauren's mother from one chair to another day. Lauren, we were like, this is not sustainable. You've got to move to California from Florida, and we can be close, and that's what they did. In the documentary, your dad is taking your mom home from your wedding, and she starts yelling at him when they get off the plane. It just seems like, what do you do? Lauren, life seems to be highs and lows, and that was that weekend. I truly hate that that happened, and that's part of my dad's memory of our wedding weekend. But that's life, and we've turned a lot of that pain into good. That was a learning experience, and then we moved on. How many movie paychecks did it cost to care for someone with Alzheimer's? Beth, Seth, it depends on which movie, either several or one fraction of one. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to give someone good 24-hour-a-day in-home care. And it's not giving you anything other than some slight sense of normalcy. It's not like you're working towards a cure. It's not treatment. Lauren, hopefully, as time goes on, our country will understand how to support caregivers. You should be able to make a choice of how you care for your loved one, whether in your home or in one that is professionally run. Lauren, when you were rewatching some of these moments in your with your mother, what did you learn about yourself? Lauren, there are times I can watch the film and it's like, oh, this is a powerful documentary with a lot of information. And there are other times I watch it and I'm like, this was the darkest time in my life. Seeing my mom and what this disease did to her is always imprinted on my mind. But like any type of grief, it's more present sometimes and less other times. And this interview was by Joel Stein. Now, there's a section in this bulletin titled State News, Mid-Atlantic, and there is a small section on North Carolina. Enhancing livability. Nine entities across the Tar Heel State received AARP Community Challenge grants in 2024 for quick action projects to help make communities more livable. Senior Resources of Guilford, a nonprofit that aims to enhance independence and quality of life for older adults, secured a $2,500 grant to help pay for a walk audit in the city of High Point, southwest of Greensboro. Bob Gerken, the group's aging-in-place coordinator, says the audit will help identify pedestrian safety issues in a disadvantaged neighborhood of High Point. He says about 30% of the neighborhood's residents do not have access to a vehicle. Gerken hopes the audit will spark changes that improve walkability in the community. He notes, for example, that there's a wonderful little neighborhood park, but it's very difficult for the people to get there safely because of uneven concrete and other issues. Among other grantees in the state this year, Jones County Community Hope was awarded $11,000 to help Trenton residents gain digital literary skills and access to technology. The city of Salisbury received $2,023 to expand bike parking at Rowan Helping Ministries, which serves individuals experiencing homelessness. And the city of Hendersonville received $15,000 to add new bike racks, bike repair stations, and shared lane markings throughout downtown. Now a look at a question for Medicare Made Easy. My latest mammogram was clear, but the mammogram report suggested I talk to my doctor about more tests, like an ultrasound or an MRI, because of my dense breast tissue. Will Medicare pay for these extra tests? Medicare Part B covers annual screening mammograms at 100%, with no deductible for women age 40 and older, even if they have no symptoms. But Medicare does not cover the ultrasounds or magnetic resonance imaging MRI tests used only for screening purposes without any symptoms of history of breast cancer. You can expect to pay for those yourself. If your doctor says an ultrasound or MRI is medically necessary to check a symptom or abnormal finding, Medicare will cover 80% of the cost after you've met your Part B deductible, and you will pay the remaining 20%. If you have Medicare Advantage, your costs might be different, so check your plan. A new U.S. Food and Drug Administration rule now requires mammogram providers to include information on breast density in their reports to patients because it can affect the accuracy of mammogram results. I just became eligible for Medicare and tried to sign up online at ssa.gov, but it says I need to create an account. Is this new? Yes, this is a new step put in place by the Social Security Administration to make their website more secure. To sign up for Medicare or to use other services like checking your earnings or applying for retirement benefits, you now need to create a My Social Security account using ID.me or login.gov, which are services that help verify your identity. If you created a My Social Security account on or after September 18th, 2021, you don't need to do anything. If your account was created before then, you'll need to make a new one. Not everyone wants to do this, so you can still call Social Security at 800-772-1213, Monday through Friday, from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., to schedule a video or in-person appointment to enroll in Medicare. Be sure to call at least 3 months before you want your Medicare to begin, as it may take several weeks to get an appointment. And finally, my doctor told me I'm pre-diabetic. Does Medicare offer any programs to help prevent or delay the onset of type 2 diabetes? It offers the Medicare Diabetes Prevention Program, MDPP, for people who are at risk for type 2 diabetes. The program is usually conducted in a group setting and works to prevent type 2 diabetes by focusing on healthy eating, exercise, and weight loss. It includes up to 22 sessions over a year, which you can attend in person or online. An MDPP course is available for Medicare Part B enrollees only once in their lifetime. You don't need a doctor's referral to join, and it's free for people with Part B. If you are enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan, check to find an in-network program. MDPP suppliers can be a doctor's office, health center, or other entities such as a community center or faith-based organization. You can find local Medicare-certified MDPP services on Medicare's map of MDPP suppliers. The author of this piece is Anne Kayrish. She has worked as a Medicare counselor with the State Health Insurance Assistance Program and as the Medicare expert at the National Center for Benefits Outreach and Enrollment at the National Council on Aging. Now, from AARP, the magazine, we've been looking at a special report on survivors. America has become so accustomed to mass shootings that we've developed a routine. There's the shock, the horror, the memorials, the grief. But for those who survive such horrific attacks, little about life is routine anymore. Today, let's look at Dan Ledger, 76, a retired hospital chaplain and nurse from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The date of the shooting was October 27, 2018. Ledger had been setting out books for his congregation's Torah study when he heard the first shots. It was a Saturday morning, Sabbath, so he wasn't carrying a phone. Ledger and his friend, Jerry Rabinowitz, a doctor, rushed toward the sound of gunfire to try to help. Both were shot. Ledger, wounded in the hip and abdomen, lay bleeding in a stairwell for 45 minutes before he heard footsteps approaching again. This is one of two people he remembers thinking, "It's either someone to help me or it's the person who shot me coming to finish the job." Realizing he had nothing to lose, he reached out and grabbed the pant leg of the person passing by. It was a paramedic, coming to aid the wounded even before police had arrested the shooter. 5 others were injured in the attack, and 11, including Rabinowitz, were killed. A hospice nurse for many years, Dan Ledger is not unfamiliar with death. That's why, as he lay bleeding in the stairs, he made his obituary, his deathbed confession. "I didn't feel panicked," he says. "I was really reviewing my life and just appreciating the wonderful life I've had, the wonderful friends I've had." In the hospital, he hovered at the edge of death for several days. He doesn't know how many surgeries he had to repair his bladder, remove a section of his intestines, and stabilize his hip. Likely 5 or 6 operations, he thinks, plus several painful debridements of his wounds to help them heal. After 2 months in the hospital, he faced a long convalescence. There will be months more with the urinary catheter. He'll likely have a colostomy bag for the rest of his life. It would be nearly half a year before he started feeling comfortable walking again, even with a cane. 6 years after the shooting, he says, "I no longer feel as comfortable walking as I did before all this. My balance isn't as good." Ledger worked for more than 40 years in nursing, including 10 years in pediatric hospice and 4 years as a chaplain in palliative care, a job he had to retire from after the shooting due to disability. That work and his Jewish faith, he says, is what motivated him during his recovery. One of his mantras is something his friend Rabinowitz would say: "It's better to be kind than to be right." Ledger says he believes that now more than ever. "I know that there's plenty wrong in the world, but I think I'm hopeful," he says. "I think that people are inherently good." Well, we have just a little bit of time left today to look at a few milestone birthdays. There's Chris Rock. His birthday was February 7th. Former SNL actor was among the comedians invited to the Vatican by Pope Francis in 2024. He turned 60. Next is Sarah Jessica Parker. Her birthday was March 25th. Sex and the City actress is a book lover with her own book imprints, SJPLIT. Kelsey Grammer was February 21st. Cheers actor reprised role as Fraser Crane in reboot for Paramount Plus, and he turned 70. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.